going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Thank you for once again tuning into the Sports Ethos Nets podcast. We are recording at a different time than usual. It's Friday morning around 9 a.m. in Eastern time zone. Once again, this is your host, Cody Mallory. You can find me on Twitter at RealCodyMallory. So right now I am only joined by Anthony Dittmar. That's at AnthonyDittmar_ on Twitter. Hopefully Joe will be joining us at some point in the episode. He just has something going on right now due to the change in time that we're recording. But how's it going, Anthony?
How are you doing today? Enjoyed some New Jersey college basketball yesterday for those of you guys from the New Jersey area.
Yeah, it must have been great to be at that Rutgers game, huh?
I know. It's supposed to work the game and miss it. And they beat the number one team in the country. But Seton Hall also beat number seven Texas. And then the two Jersey teams are actually playing each other Sunday night. So I'm sure a lot of New Jersey fans, New Jersey Nets fans, are probably either a fan of Rutgers or Seton Hall. I might have went to them. So good day for New Jersey hoops overall for a state that no longer has a basketball team.
Sure. Yeah, for sure. I'm a UConn fan, obviously. I'm from Connecticut. That's my alumni. But still root for Jersey hoops because of the Nets. So, our records for, let's start with our records. There's been two games since we started picking. I am sadly 0-2. I don't really want to talk about it too much.
You had the record right. You just had it reversed.
Yeah, right. I got the 1-1 right. I just picked the games wrong. So that kind of sucks, but it happens. You and Joe are both 1-1. So,
yeah, we both had the Mavs win.
Mavs win, yeah. I mean, the Rockets game, like, that was a tough one to pick. No one expected Kevin Durant and LaMarcus Aldridge to sit. But we'll get more into the Nets games from this week since we last talked. But before we do that, Anthony, you want to go quickly around the league? There's been some COVID problems in the league. I think we're going to address that.
Yeah, so we saw Rick Carlisle, the coach, Indiana Pacers, now has COVID. He'll be out for however long it takes him to test negative. We saw the Raptors president, Masai Ujiri, test positive for COVID-19. The entire Chicago Bulls seem like they have COVID. I think they have potentially tonight. I think they're playing. They might be able to, like, sign an emergency player to, like, fill out their roster. Because I know Derek Jones Jr. has it. DeMar DeRozan has it. Caruso's out with the injury, so it's not like he has COVID, but Javonte Green, Kobe White, yeah, so they're getting hammered hard with their COVID issues. Yep. Austin Rivers of the Denver Nuggets is out with COVID. Non-COVID news, Klay Thompson has been scrimmaging all week at 5-on-5s, and they're saying he could be making his debut before Christmas. There are actually rumors that he might actually debut on Christmas, which would be kind of crazy because they're playing against
the awesome. Teams.
So that'd be kind of electric. Whenever he gets to play his first game, I know we're all Nets fans here, but you have to root for a guy like Klay Thompson, who's missed two straight seasons with an Achilles and ACL injury. because he's got a feel for the guy. So whatever that game is, I'm sure a lot of people are going to be tuned in. We haven't seen him play since June 2019. Like, that's insane.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Other injuries, nothing really that much notable. Like, there's been a lot of COVID issues, like, over a bunch of teams. I know the Grizzlies got hit hard with it. I'm pretty sure John Morant tested positive too, but he's also injured, so it kind of really didn't make a difference because I think the injury is going to keep him out longer than the COVID will. The Brook Lopez remains out for the Bucks. He underwent back surgery. He's out indefinitely. We already talked about Bam's injury. And other than that, yeah, just like kind of minor injuries around the league. Well, COVID-19 is definitely ramping up in with the new Omicron variant coming around this country. And we're talking about this earlier. It's mostly in the markets that don't have the vaccine mandate. So the ones that do have it are New York, Golden State, and LA. We haven't really seen any issues COVID-related. Keep our fingers crossed in terms
besides the LeBron situation. But yeah.
Well, it was a false positive, so I'm not going to count
that. Right.
So, yeah, it's not been anything crazy. We saw last year, like, the Nets kind of hit hard for a bit, but it wasn't – it was before, like, the vaccine was massively available. So, I don't know, maybe Kyrie Irving could get that vaccine for the plant vaccine. He could start playing games. But, yeah, aside from that.
Yeah, it's crazy because, like we said, I think on the last episode, the Nets just played the Bulls on Saturday before they had this outbreak. And, I mean, we're – what? 6 days passed and no Nets players have tested positive, so we should be in the clear. I don't want to jinx it, but when you see another team just like go rampant like this with COVID positive cases, it makes you worry about teams that they recently played against.
In the Bulls, their own locker room specifically, they played last Saturday, so we talked about last
right.
episode, like it could affect the Nets throughout this week in terms of like maybe like Wednesday, Thursday. I don't want to say we're in the clear yet, but I think we're towards the last 9 yards. So hopefully.
Right. Should be getting there. So the other day I tweeted out asking people who follow me on Twitter kind of what basketball player made them fall in love with the game. It got close to 80 responses, which I was pretty surprised about because, I mean, that's just a lot of interaction in general, let alone it wasn't really like a Nets-related question that I tweeted out. So I just wanted to quickly dive into it. I mentioned in the tweet, I think I mentioned in the podcast before that Jason Kidd was really the player for me. I just loved how he played. He was never like the super most athletic, but he just affected the game in so many aspects. And he made kids believe that they could do it. Kind of like what Steph Curry's doing in a different aspect where it's like Steph Curry's not this 6'8", 250 jacked guy that dunks on everyone. He does it with skill. So that's kind of like what my Jason Kidd was with Steph Curry. Obviously not to the extreme of making 7 million threes in a game, but just still affecting the game in various aspects besides pure athleticism and just being a beast. So, Anthony, before I go into some of the Twitter responses, I just kind of wanted to hear who your player is. I honestly don't know, so I'm pretty excited to hear it.
Okay, yeah. So there's the first player. I'll give you a little scene here. It's 2007. I was probably like 10 years old. Didn't really watch basketball, really. Like, I kind of was just getting into it. Still a little young to kind of like be a diehard for sports. You know, you're still like in elementary school, whatever. You're more preoccupied with that. But I go to Nets game. They're playing the Warriors. It was before Steph Curry, as all those guys were there. It was like Baron Davis and like, I think David Lee and stuff, but they were playing them in the Nets. Vince Carter was the guy. I got a Vince Carter jersey. I saw him at his jersey inside the team store and he had a game winning three. I'm pretty sure to seal the game. And ever since then, just like I fell in love. I still have my Vince Carter, New Jersey Nets jersey. It does not fit me sadly, but it's a nice, it's one of those fire New Jersey Nets purple ones that I really like. They were like one of their alternates, I believe, for a little bit, but they were really nice. And he kind of just the way he played basketball. I loved watching him. Like, I didn't watch him in Toronto, but like watching some of his highlights there and like in New Jersey too, when he still had his athleticism. Cause a lot of people now know him as like that veteran guy that switched teams every year. But before that, he was really one of the Nets catalysts over the course of the mid 2000s. He wasn't a part of those finals teams because he kind of came after that. But he definitely like gave Nets fans hope for those couple years where like they were consistently a contender in the playoffs. So I love this game. I love watching him dunk, and he was just a great player. I loved watching him.
Yeah, I was so excited when he came over from the Raptors.
The trade to Orlando killed me though. I think we traded him Ray for Alston. That's who it was. I was so mad because I think we were just like cutting money, to be honest, because we're being cheap. That trade broke my heart.
So most of the responses on Twitter. I'm not going to read each individual one because, like I said, there's over 80, and I just don't want to take that kind of time. But As mainly Nets fans follow me, there was a lot of Vince Carter, obviously. Jason Kidd was thrown in there. A lot of the younger kids are saying James Harden, which is no surprise. He kind of revolutionized basketball himself with that step back and getting to the foul line. There's a lot of Dr. J, which is for the older crowd, obviously. Kobe Bryant, the great Kobe Bryant. There's a couple, like, thrown in there. Like, there's a Paul Pierce I saw.
What was the weirdest one you saw?
The weirdest one I saw. That's tough. Most of them are, like, generic, like, big-name players. I'm scrolling through it right now to see if I can find someone.
I responded. Scotty. You'll see.
Yeah, I'm not going to say that. Some of the rare ones I saw, I would say, is I think there's only one person that said Scottie Pippen, which –
That is weird.
there was a person that said Manu Ginobili.
That's a cool one, though. Maybe he was from Argentina or something.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I do have a lot of European followers, so that wouldn't surprise me. There was a couple of Tracy McGrady's. Alonzo Mourning. That's kind of a strange one.
That is a weird one, yeah. I know that's the question at hand, but who's your favorite Brooklyn Nets player of all time? Like, not including jerseys. I'm just curious.
It's not even a hard question for me. It's Joe Johnson, 100%.
I gotta follow you on that. It's definitely Joe Johnson for me too. Not to copy you, but I loved all the clutch ISO Joe moments.
Bro, there was that one season where I swear he hit a buzzer beater like every other game.
Oh, he had like four or five. I'm pretty sure he has like one of all time. Like, I'm not even kidding. Like, he's definitely up there, like all time list.
It was just that I just loved it, and I don't know. I just loved his game. I loved how he like I said, I'm not a big fan of the mainly athletic players that aren't skilled. I like to see more of like the skilled kind of players. Like, don't get me wrong, Joe Johnson was big and he was jacked out of his mind and strong, but he also was like a little bit of a finesse player too. I don't know. I like how he could mix it up. Kind of like KD can, whether it's in the post or whether it's off the dribble, catch and shoot, he could do a little bit of everything. So, and then, like I said, the clutch shots were just amazing, and I'll never forget them. So
it was wild because when we got Deron Williams and like, we're moving to the Brooklyn, I remember the Nets kind of wanted to have like a 1-2 combo. And this is before the year before they got Pierce and Garnett. They kind of made that splash trade at Atlanta in the offseason. I remember I was at my grandma's house and I saw the trade. I'm like, holy shit, we gave up like half our roster for him. And I knew Joe Johnson was a player, but I was like, oh my God, we just gutted our entire roster. But I remember they marketed the hell out of that Brooklyn's backcourt. And I remember got a couple shirts with that. And that was, honestly, he ended up being the better player than Deron Williams. No one really expected that. So he's supposed to be the Robin. He was like the more consistent and the better player, like the course of his Brooklyn tenure. And it was sad when we had to rebuild and let him go. I think it was the year after we got the 8 seed and lost to Atlanta in the first round. Yep. I think we kind of like cut the tires on like that little window we had.
I'm going to be honest. I thought the Nets were going to beat Atlanta in that series. I know they were the 8 seed, but I didn't think Atlanta was that good.
I think they lost at 6. Just kind of.
Yeah, it went to 6. Yeah, they lost 4-2.
I'm pretty sure they tied it 2-2 at one point, and it was kind of like.
Yeah, and then they lost a bunch of close games. Yeah, that was tough, but I don't want to go back that way. I don't want to have those bad memories.
Look forward.
Yeah, just like the KD toe on the line memory is like fresh, but those
that's the early worst days.
Those early days in Brooklyn memories, they still get me. They still haunt me.
Yep.
Even that series against the Heat, I think they lost in 5, but every game was close, and they blew it down the stretch to LeBron and Wade.
Remember the Mirza-Slavovic game?
Yes.
They could not be that game. It was Mirza, it was Allen Anderson, Deron Williams hit a few, Pierce hit a few. I'm pretty sure. Oh no, who was the? Oh, it was not CJ Watt. They had Livingston. I don't think he had a 3. There was someone else that made a clutch 3 too. It was a great game.
Remember the Bulls series when Nate Robinson went off for 700 points when D Rose was out?
Triple overtime. I remember. I was so. Yeah. It was because CJ Watson went to go dunk it on a fast break. I'm like, my guy, just lay it up. You're not a dunk. Would have won us the game. Would have iced it.
Yeah. So let's forget all that. Let's get all that out of my brain again. I've been trying over the years, but so let's kind of jump right into the games that the Nets played since we last talked. So to start was the Mavericks game. I was fresh the day off, day after of the COVID booster shot, so I was feeling pretty down. I did record the game and I rewatched it after the second half. So I saw most of the first half live. Once again, it was kind of getting repetitive, just what the Nets do. They come out slow. They don't really play a whole lot of defense early, and they go down by a big amount, and then they decide to challenge themselves and mount the comeback. which they successfully did against the Mavericks. Obviously, Kevin Durant was Kevin Durant in the fourth quarter. He was amazing. James Harden was one of his most efficient games, I would say. He shot 7 of 13. He hit 3 of 6 from threes. He almost had – he didn't have a triple-double right now. He was one rebound short, but he had 23, 12, and 9. So it was one of Harden's better games of the season, in my opinion. I know he only took 13 shots, but he was fairly efficient. He only had 5 turnovers, which you don't want to say only with 5, but that's the amount of time he has the ball in his hands. If he can keep it to like 4 or 5 turnovers, I'm fine with it because he's dribbling the ball a lot. So like we understand. Big takeaway for me was the second half defense. They held the Mavericks to 37 points in the entire half, obviously only allowing 13 in the fourth, which allowed the Nets to win. And the biggest reason for that was the return of none other than Nicholas Claxton. He was amazing on defense, switching. He frustrated the hell out of Luka in the second half, but Luka shoved him in the chest, got teed up. So, like, if Claxton's back, he's either got to play or – but he could be a trade piece, but we'll get into that later with some of the Twitter questions. Yeah, but what was your big takeaways on the game?
On that Mavericks game, like, once again, like you said, the slow start, really infuriating. I feel like they just can't keep doing that if they want to win games. Like a lot of times it doesn't work. Like, it's like we get it close, but we don't hold on. You don't want to put yourself in a hole like that. But when you have Kevin Durant, it works out. We saw the Nets obviously ended up in the fourth. I think my biggest takeaway was definitely Claxton's switching ability. Like, he was able to guard, like, Luka Doncic, like the team's best player. He doesn't only just guard bigs. He guards, like, almost anybody on the court, honestly. He's just so versatile. And it's such a Swiss Army knife for the Nets. It's kind of – I don't want to say it's like Ben Simmons on defense, but it kind of like it is when you can just, like, switch onto any defender. But, like, if you have that in your bag, like that game against Phoenix that we lost when they kept switching Aldridge on Booker, I said we win that game because there was, like, 4 straight possessions where Aldridge just got blown by. Because he couldn't stick with Devin Booker. If you have Claxton there, he could test a few of those. That's like a 6-8 point to 8 point swing. That's really big. He had Luka to 0 field goals, like you said. So I like that a lot. James Johnson also really stuck out to me in that game. He had like a Draymond Green type of role, like kind of doing all the dirty work, but he's also like picking and choosing his spots and like scoring here and there. So that was pretty cool to see if they can use him in that kind of role throughout the season. I think I prefer that. Obviously, when you have a shorter bench, you can't really like pick and choose those battles, but against the Mavericks, it was nice. Harden probably has the most efficient game too, 7 of 13 in the field, which you really don't say too often. And yeah, they looked good. I didn't like you. I saw you tweeted. I didn't like they didn't foul at the last possession. I get in the initial shot, they really didn't have a good attempt with like 4 seconds left. I say you foul and you're up 3. They got lucky. Hardaway bricked it, but he had a wide open 3. Like he beat Durant in the pump fake, and that goes in. It's a whole different conversation. Like, why didn't Nash foul? Why didn't we do this? So in those situations, we usually do foul. We didn't that time, so it kind of, like, annoyed me, but we won, so it's kind of like whatever.
Yeah, I was actually going to ask you if you thought they should have fouled because, like you said, I tweeted it out. The initial shot, like, they shot it early, so, like, they didn't really have the chance to do it. But then there was dribbling at the top of the key, passing back and forth. I think it was between Luka and Porzingis. They couldn't get a shot off. They passed it out to Tim Hardaway on the corner, on the wing, right side. KD closed out super hard, like super hard, which he's like 10 feet tall. I don't know if that was so necessary. Harden did a little side dribble, and he got a wide open 3. Luckily, he clanked it. But there was several opportunities for them to foul up 3 where the first thing I thought was like, I was screaming at my TV, foul, foul, foul. And I was watching it the next morning. So like, it was the first thing I saw. But nonetheless, the Nets escaped with the win. So at the end of the day, that's all we really care about. Anything else you want to touch on in that game?
It was one of the worst historic shooting nights, actually, for a team from 3. I think the Mavs were like 9-46 or something like that. So it was like up there with that Rockets game against the Warriors in the conference finals.
Jeez. I didn't notice that until you just said that. Yeah, they shot 19% from 3 on 46 attempts.
Yeah, so that's you don't win ball games like that.
Right. So when I was watching it, I was thinking, like, wow, the Nets are getting lucky because the Mavs are getting a lot of wide open threes. And I didn't realize how poorly they shot. What felt like watching the game, not live time, but afterwards, it felt like they were a majority of like open threes that they were just missing. And it wasn't really great defense until that fourth quarter.
Yeah. They got lucky. Honestly, it was a fortunate win. You take your wins, you can get them. But
right. So yeah, that led into Wednesday night against the red hot Houston Rockets. I think they had won 7 in a row. So obviously with no Kevin Durant and no LaMarcus Aldridge, the game was very different than what it would have been if those two played. Without those two, without Kyrie, without Joe Harris, you're realistically down 4 starters. And then throw into that, it's a back-to-back. So players like James Harden, Nicholas Claxton played a decent minute load against the Mavericks. James Johnson played a good amount of minutes against the Mavericks. The Nets were tired. They shot very poorly. They were 35 of 89. They shot 39%. They fell down big early, and they didn't have the firepower to get back into it, really. They did. I think they cut it to, like, I don't remember off the top of my head. I don't know if you do, Anthony. I think it was like 3 or 4 in the fourth quarter.
And you confirm that. I'm just checking.
Yeah, and then James Harden missed a step back, and then the step back 3. And then there was a couple turnovers by James Harden that were pretty careless. That was frustrating to watch. I mean, he shot 4 of 16. He had 8 turnovers, so it definitely wasn't his best game. But after I was thinking about it, I was pretty harsh on him on Twitter, per usual. But there was no floor spacing. He was getting blitzed and double-teamed, and no one else on his team could shoot. I mean, Patty Mills has started to struggle a little bit from 3. He shot, I think he was 2 of 8. Yeah, he was 2 of 8 against the Mavericks. And then he was 3 of 9 against the Rockets. I mean, he hit a timely 3 against the Mavs, but he's been struggling to shoot. And without Joe Harris, they don't really have any other, like, knockdown shooters from 3 on catch and shoot. So it was very hard for Harden. I mean, the Rockets were missing players too, but ultimately they got the job done. And like I have in my notes, there's not a whole lot I want to talk about in this game because there was no Kevin Durant, there's no LaMarcus Aldridge.
Yeah, the only thing that stuck out to me is, like, another inefficient game from Harden. Like, we keep noting, he doesn't really have good back-to-back games. I say it's, like, 1 every 3 games, if we're going to be honest, that he has, like, a really good game, which is definitely not a rate that the Nets can afford. He shot 4 of 16 from the field, and he had, like you said, all his turnovers. Like, the one where he just, like, let it roll down the court, and it just got stolen by that guy. I forget his name. I can't remember. But he was Garrison Matthews. He just was all over the court. Like, that guy, it was just stupid. It was an ugly game. I tweeted the other day, I think the Nets definitely need another floor spacer. When you don't have Patty Mills out there, it's really just not a lot of shooting. Even when you have Durant, it's like you need guys to space the court. When you run out a Bembry, James Johnson, Nick Claxton, and Bruce Brown lineup, you're not really getting a lot of shooting threats. They kind of can just pick and choose the double teams, and you're not really going to have any.
Right.
Good offense. So yeah, it's becoming a problem. You need to sign like a flashy guy. Like I said, JJ Redick or pick up Tyler Johnson off the street. Like these guys can at least just shoot the ball. I haven't played 15 minutes. Like, you know what I mean? Like, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
It was an ugly game. Nothing really to talk about. Very bizarre. The Rockets went from 1-18 to a 7-game winning streak. I feel like I know that's the first time it's ever happened. But it's such a weird thing. It's like, why?
Yeah, why? And it's like they're missing like their best players too.
Jalen Green. I mean, John Wall's benched.
Christian Wood's probably their best player. But besides that, they're missing Kevin Porter Jr. Obviously, John Wall. So great it's just, it, yeah, like you said, it's strange that they've done it, but hey, credit to them, they've done it.
The Nets, I said, the Nets have their second best player has been like 60% of himself, and that's being kind of modest. Their third and fourth best players were out, like a good stretch, and their best player and their fifth best player weren't playing. So it's really like, you want to steal a game against a team like the Rockets, you think it's like an easy win. I think that was like the team's mindset, like resting KD and Aldridge there. You saw them do it against Orlando once. Like you try to just take your wins when you steal one. Didn't work out that time. They got to finish out the trip strong. Though. We can't. I think they gotta take both games.
Yeah, they're 1-1 on the week. Gotta take them both to remain positive. The goal is to win more games than you lose every week. If you do that, you're gonna be all right in the NBA.
Exactly. 9-3 on the road is nothing to be ashamed about.
No, that's impressive, definitely. Like you said, especially given all the circumstances that have been going on, that's impressive.
100%.
And a majority of it is just Kevin Durant is like, he's Kevin Durant. I honestly think this could be a bold statement that I'm about to make. You put Kevin Durant on the Detroit Pistons. I believe they are a playoff team in the Eastern Conference.
That they take a lot of work. They can get in the play-in, maybe. That's what I would say. The play-in.
Play-in. Yeah. Okay. But yeah. All right. I think it would be clear in the play-in.
Let's watch them Sunday together. Yeah. Oh, yeah. The one thing I also want to say too is David Duke looks really good. Like, he might be a good rotation player, like over Jevon Carter.
Yes. I just wish his jump shot looked kind of ugly. Yeah, he had good cutting ability. But once again, that falls into like the role of like what Bruce Brown does, what DeAndre Bembry does, kind of what everyone else does on the team is not make a wide open jump shot.
It'd be funny. Like I'm just picturing Bembry, Bruce Brown, and David Duke like coming from like three different sides of the court, like left, right, and middle, and they're all coming in for like a floater at the same time.
Oh, cut to the basket. Yeah, throwing Jevon Carter out there with his dribbling nonsense, turning the ball. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Let's not dive too much into the negatives.
Yeah, let's be positive. It's a positive, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Injuries, there's really nothing has changed. I mean, obviously, Durant and Aldridge were out last game, but it was strictly due to rest, no injury at all. Obviously, Joe Harris. The best news is every time we do another episode, we are closer to seeing Joe Harris back on the basketball court.
Yeah.
And my main takeaway from injuries was that Nicholas Claxton appears to be in at least somewhat decent shape where he could be a big-time contributor for the Nets.
Yeah.
Because like you said, he took a while to come back from that illness, non-COVID-related, but if he could come back, that'd be a big boost at the center position for the Nets.
100%. Yeah, he definitely could be one of the most Nets important players on this stretch, whether it be boosting trade value, like you said, or just being like their best defender. Because I'm honestly cool with just letting him be like our Swiss Army knife in defense. If you're going up against Giannis, you're going up against like a Luka, or just someone that can beat you on every level of defense, and you can have him like be out there to like be able to switch on any defender. Because when you have Aldridge out there, like, yes, he's great on offense, but it's a big negative on defense, and teams are going to attack him. Like, I know it's a different position, but, like, if you ever watched the Miami Heat play, like, teams will specifically attack Duncan Robinson to the point where the Heat can't put him in closing lineups because it's just too much of a negative because they'll just attack, switch on him every single time.
Yeah, that's kind of been Aldridge's role. Even if you look at the Mavericks game, he played 23 minutes, he had 15 points, but he was a minus four because of the defensive liability part.
You got
to
play.
So I guess he's good to start out there, kind of, especially because the Nets can't seem to score in the first quarter. So he's good to start with that. But then as it gets to like closing time, especially if you're trailing, which the Nets seem to be trailing a lot going into the second half and fourth quarter, you got to put a player out there that can get you stops. Because if you don't get the stops, it doesn't matter how many points you score. You're not going to come back from the deficit, especially when it's – or the Nets down against the Mavericks. Is it 17?
17, yeah.
Yeah, so you're not going to come back from that deficit if you're not getting any stops. So that's kind of the problem with Aldridge is he just doesn't have that foot speed anymore, especially with the Nets scheme when they switch everything and he's getting ISO'd by elite NBA talent guards at the top of the key.
100%.
Yeah, so what I want to spend the rest of the episode on for the most part is I tweeted out this morning about asking some Nets related questions that we would discuss and answer. Luckily for Joe, he's going to miss out on this first one. So I'm going to kind of throw you on the spot, Anthony. I don't know if you read any of the questions. I personally did not until right now. I like skimmed them, but I think there's 8 or 9. We're going to quickly go through some of them. Some of them are kind of repetitive. So first question, they kind of go hand in hand. We got one from Tom Stedman 7 and Durant 735. So Tom Stedman says, is Joe Harris coming back enough when healthy, or do we need to try to make some moves? And Durant 735 said some wing shooters you would like the Nets to look for. So this kind of goes into what we were talking about with the Nets not having the people to space the floor, especially when they were without Durant and Aldridge. So I guess my take is Joe Harris coming back enough. They'll always have at least one spot up shooter on the floor with Joe Harris and Patty Mills. Obviously, it leaves zero room for injury. So it would definitely be nice to be able to add another shooter. Which kind of goes into Durant's 735's question. When I first heard that, I immediately thought the Indiana Pacers, who pretty much said they want to tank. So a name that came to mind for me was Jeremy Lamb, who is on an expiring contract. The only problem is the Nets don't really have a whole lot to trade. I know you threw out the name of J.J. Redick. He's retired. It would be nice if he came back. But I think he's loving the podcasting business, so I don't know. It would be tough. But are there any names that come to mind to you, or do you even think the Nets need to add any more shooters with Harris coming back?
I think with Harris coming back, he's still using another shooter because last year we had Landry Shamet and we had a couple other guys like Tyler Johnson that were able to like space it out. Like, yeah, the defense wasn't as great last year, but I think you need like a little happy medium here. If it's not on the free agency market, like I said about Redick and what's it called, Tyler Johnson, I'd be cool with like acquiring like a 3-and-D wing, like a Terrence Ross from the Magic. Don't really know what his price tag would be. Probably a little expensive. I know we mentioned Goran Dragic before with the Raptors getting DNP'd. He'd be an interesting target if he's bought out to try to get him here to like get more shooters in the court. Other than that, the problem is it's tough right now looking at the trade aspect because a lot of teams are in it. Like the conference, it's like 13 out of 15 teams have a realistic chance. In the West, it's probably like four or five teams don't really have a shot realistically, but that's not really a lot of teams to pick from, especially when all those teams are like actively tanking. I wonder if the Kings decide to blow it up, maybe get some spare parts from them. Like, we know the Pacers, obviously, that we mentioned. I'm not sure a whole lot of teams will be selling until like the very end, like if they're on the cusp of making the play-in game, which was honestly the idea of the NBA having the play-in game. So other than Dragic and Ross, I guess you have to see if some teams fall off because I really can't think of anybody else that might be like available because shooting scarce. Maybe New Orleans if they blow it up, if like decide to rebuild. Yeah, those are my two guys, Terrence Ross and Gordon Dragic.
Yeah, I agree. Those would be definitely big additions. Kind of to go along with the trading piece at Game Tech Studios tweeted at me simply trades and then _6_Burrow asked if Cam Thomas is the only trading piece on the Nets that other teams would be interested in. So yes, other teams would definitely be interested in Cam Thomas, but I think Nicholas Claxton, if the Nets decide to move on, feeling they have enough at the bigs position with Aldridge, James Johnson, Millsap, and then if Blake Griffin starts playing better, I think Claxton is a name that they could move. He's on an expiring contract. Who else do you think they could move? They don't really have any first-round picks ever because of the Harden trade. Second-rounders, I guess. But what do you think they could trade?
Well, they burned 5 second-rounders to get DeAndre Jordan off this team.
That's true.
They can't trade their first because of the rule they made because of the Nets. They can't trade alternate. Like, you can't trade back-to-back consecutive drafts first-round picks. And they did, like, 8 years of, like, swap and trade with first-rounders of Houston. So, really, it's just Claxton and Cam Thomas in terms of, like, what a non-contender would want. Because, like, yeah, there's guys like obviously any contender would want Patty Mills or, like, a Bruce Brown. But when you're trading with these teams, they're teams that are not actively trying to win. They want, like, pieces for the future. So, with that in mind, it's really just Nick Claxton. And he said Cam Thomas. I don't think the Nets are really that keen on training Cam Thomas because that the purpose of drafting him was to kind of get like a cheap guy off the bench because when you have three guys at max contracts, you need your bargains, you can get them. So really, I think the only realistic one to get moved is Claxton because I don't think they're going to pay him this offseason. They mentioned with Jared Allen, they just were never going to do it. They don't see the value in paying a center. They kind of have their next project in De'Aaron Sharp they drafted this year. We'll see if he pans out. But yeah, really just Claxton, which I don't know how much that really gets you, considering he hasn't played a whole lot of the games over the course of his 3-year career. Like if he puts together like a good month or two, maybe you can boost him to like a serviceable level where he can get someone maybe. But teams have to keep in mind, they have to give him the contract too. So, yeah.
Right.
I don't know. I just Claxton, maybe, I guess.
Maybe Bruce Brown, honestly, because like we said before, that role is kind of repetitive with the emergence of DeAndre Bembry. Especially if David Duke turns out to be solid, then who knows, maybe Bruce Brown. I think he's on an expiring deal though, right?
He is. He's on a 1-year deal, I think. So
yeah.
He had a lot of shooters, I think he took a discount, but I don't think the Nets are are in the business of giving him a long-term deal.
Yeah, so probably a tanking team's not going to really want a player on an expiring contract, especially Bruce Brown. He's not going to want to play for a tanking team.
Yeah, exactly.
So we'll go. We got two more. There's a couple about Steve Nash to know Michael. I don't know if I, or Michelle, I don't know if I'm saying that right. The concern about Nash's ability to make this team better. And then O'Neill underscore BKLYN said, do the Nets need a new head coach? So I'm laughing, as you can hear, because I think the Steve Nash hate is absolutely absurd and ridiculous. I think he's doing a good job, and we have seen improvements in various aspects of his coaching ability, whether it's calling timeouts now, letting his guys play more to get the wins. I know last season was a little different because Durant was coming off the injury. And even Harden or Kyrie, they all had like nagging injuries that kept popping up, whether it was ankles or hamstrings. So last season was a little different, but I don't think Steve Nash is the problem. I believe if you take away several starters from a team, they're going to struggle. And the Nets are still first in the East. So,
yeah, I think like, people were saying like, oh, Nash versus Atkinson. I think Atkinson was the coach perfect. Like, it was a good coach for like where the Nets were when they were kind of like, emerging. And I think Steve Nash is the perfect coach to manage these superstars. And I feel like he's actually done a pretty good job. Like I feel like a lot of times with in like last year, like Nash was hesitant to like make the move that he has made. Like there was the Jared Allen versus DeAndre Jordan debate, like Jared Allen should be starting. Like, what the heck are we doing? And then there was a couple of things where he didn't do, but like this year he's benched Blake Griffin. He's done a couple other things where he's like mix and match rotation where like he sees and fit. And I feel like a lot of the decisions he's made have panned out. He's had limited resources these last two games. You can't really get on him for that Rockets game. Like, who is he going to play? Is he going to bring from, like, Michael Jordan off the bench? Come on. There's not a lot to work with. People are getting on him. Like, I saw someone tweet at me, like, the coach is the problem. I'm like, there's like seven guys that are legitimately like deserve to play. And you have to play some other guys to get guys rest. It's just how it is.
Right. Yeah, so thank you everyone that submitted a Twitter question. It was literally within like a 20-minute period, so I'm happy that we got 8 or 9 of them. Like I said, some were repetitive, some we already talked about, but going forward, we definitely want to do this at the end of every episode. Before we finish, let's just very quickly preview who the Nets have the rest of this week. So tonight, they play against the Atlanta Hawks, who are 7-3 in their last 10. They're playing good basketball. They haven't actually played a game since Monday, so they are definitely very well rested coming into the game tonight, and they are expected to get Cam Reddish back. RIP to TLC, that means he'll be sliding out of the starting lineup and lose his revenge game tonight, but he's actually been playing pretty decent in the starting lineup. I don't want to say that, but he has been since he was inserted. And then obviously they lost Solomon Hill with the hamstring tear. They haven't had DeAndre Hunter or Bogdanovich, but they still have a very good roster. So out of the two games, that's definitely the tougher game to win. I think we would both agree on, Anthony.
And I don't think Detroit's really given us nightmares, even though last year they did. Yeah. They did cook us.
Right. So, I mean, that game's a good game tonight. For our predictions, I predicted a win. Joe is the only one to predict a loss tonight. And then against Detroit, obviously Detroit has been the worst team in the league. They're 4-20. They've lost 10 games in a row. I feel bad for the city of Detroit. They used to be an NBA powerhouse, obviously. But they've just been bad, like very bad recently. But once again, you can't ever count out an opponent, and you never know what can happen in an NBA game. A team could shoot lights out from three and beat you, because obviously at the end of the day, they're all professional basketball players. Anything you want to highlight or talk about with either of those two games?
Yeah, like you said, Atlanta's definitely the harder game. Got to contain Trae Young. I know he's tough to defend. He's having a great year. Everyone's talking about like the foul shooting thing where he's going to like struggle. And yeah, Harden struggled with that, but Trae Young's honestly had one of his best years of his career. He has the most points scored in the league. He's not first in points per game. He's actually scored the most points. He's been great all around. I think he's a top 20 player. I think it's even getting closer to top 15. Personally, I think he's an astounding point guard. The Hawks are definitely going to be tough to play. Hopefully the Nets get off to a strong start for once. It'd be cool to be like winning a basketball game in the first half. That'd be kind of cool. I'd like that. And then not having to dig ourselves out. It'd be really fun too. And then the Detroit game is honestly, if we lose that game, if you think Nets Twitter was bad after that Rockets game, oh boy, you don't want to go on Twitter on Sunday if they lose to the tanking Pistons. I will personally not be partaking in any Twitter activity if they lose that game.
Well, the loss of the Rockets and the Pistons in the same week would be brutal.
Yeah, that would be very bad.
But all jokes aside, I'm very interested in the Nets, the game with Atlanta tonight very quickly because of Trae Young. Obviously, the Nets switch everything, and I'm expecting Atlanta to really attack LaMarcus Aldridge in pick and roll, get him switched on to Trae Young, and then let Trae Young absolutely cook him. So it's interesting to see how long Steve Nash will let that go before he counters with Claxton or James Johnson at the five.
I wouldn't start Aldridge. I'd match Aldridge with the second unit minutes so you don't get beat by those Trae Young switches. Because I could just picture right now Trae Young blowing right past LaMarcus Aldridge to the rim.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so that would be interesting
Blake,
to see.
You Blake, if like you wanted, Blake? It's kind of weird to play Blake a little bit. He looked kind of decent in that Mavericks game. I mean, that Rockets game.
Yeah. So those two games will close the week out. Thank you, everyone, for listening to the Sports Ethos Nets podcast. This is your host, Cody Mallory. Once again, I was only joined by Anthony Dittmar today as Joe had a prior commitment and he was unable to join, but he should be back with us on our next episode. As always, please subscribe, like, comment, tweet at us. We love answering and interacting with the fans of the Nets. And let's go Nets.
Nets in four.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.